Kevin Garnett changes the culture in Boston. But first, a word about what's happening in our country. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast for Tuesday, June 2nd. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. Thank you for joining the podcast. And I'll give you the opportunity, if you don't want to hear this, you can go ahead and skip ahead. Segment 2, Segment 3 is a continuation of our discussion about the Celtics history and Kevin Garnett and his influence on the Boston Celtics. You can skip ahead. You'll have a nice 19-minute podcast. You don't have to hear me talk. I'd like, if you would please indulge me, if you would listen. And that's the theme of what I wanted to say at the beginning, is that we need to listen. What is happening in our society today is a direct result of not listening. It's a direct result of willful ignorance. It is a direct result of generations of ignoring a condition in this country that allows for human beings to be treated as less than human. You know, when it all gets boiled down, we all really want the same thing. Whether you're black, you're white, I'm Greek, son of Greek immigrants, whatever it is, gender, race, sexual orientation, we all want the same things. We want to wake up. We want to go to a job that we like. We want to make a little bit of money so we can go and eat food, like not have to scrape by for food. We want to, you know, live somewhat comfortably. We want to have a relationship with somebody and just leave us alone. That's kind of what we all want, right? I just want to wake up. I want to do my job. I want to hang out with my friends, my family, a significant other. I want to be able to eat and not be hungry. I want to have emotional and sexual gratification, and then I go to sleep. Like that's what everybody wants, right? Doesn't matter if you're black, white, Greek, Chinese, male, female, gay, straight. We all kind of want that same thing. But by virtue of being some of those other things, people are not allowed to have that same pursuit. However, if you were to just talk to somebody and understand who that person is, you might understand that we're not that different. It's a little like that story that I told about Larry Bird and Magic Johnson getting together for lunch and realizing that as competitive as they were against one another, they were kind of the same person with similar stories. And they never would have known that about each other unless they sat down for lunch and talked, and that they each listened. People of color in the United States have been telling us for a long time that the conditions for them in this country are bad, problematic, worse, whatever you want to call it. People of color have told us for a long time, hey, we're not being treated the same. The reason why we're in this place is because for generations, we have not listened to fellow human beings talk to us, try to tell us, hey, We just want the same thing you want. Why can't we have the same opportunity? Why is it that George Floyd laid there under the knees of officers who had him subdued and still didn't get up and still didn't get off his neck when he begged? Why? Why have people of color been talking about that kind of police brutality, not for a year, not for 5 years, for generations? Why are we not listening? The protests, the riots, and I'm not talking about the anarchists or whomever comes in and is causing chaos for the sake of causing chaos. That's horrible and not I don't condone that. But there is rioting amongst the people who are protesting George Floyd. Those voices are voices that have not been heard. When you are in a conversation with somebody and you say something and they don't hear you, you speak louder. And if they still don't hear you, you speak louder. And if they still don't hear you, you start to yell. And if they still don't hear you, you start to get upset. You gesture. You do things to get attention. People of color have been telling us forever that things are not right. And we have chosen collectively as a country to not listen. Billie Holiday recorded Strange Fruit in the late 1930s. A protest song about lynching of black people in the South in the 1930s. Here we are almost 80 years later. And it is 80 years later. And some of the same things or similar things are happening. People are trying to live their lives. And even if you want to believe that George Floyd passed a bad 20, that's not a death sentence. Even if you want to believe that some of the men and women committed some sort of thing before they encountered police brutality, they are due a fair process. Those officers were not a jury of their peers. They were not a judge. They did not give these people, they did not give George Floyd his constitutional rights to due process, which in and of itself is problematic, but even so, he was robbed of his constitutional rights. He was killed. There are people who want to lash out and hold up this ideal of what the United States should be, yet you ignore not only the voices, but the Constitution that allows people the right to freedom and liberty. You allow rogue police officers to commit these atrocities with no punishment. They're not protecting and serving. These officers are ignoring their duty. And the other officers who stand by them are complicit. You are ignoring your oath to protect and serve and uphold the law. You're not above the law. But we let it happen because we're not listening. Instead of turning and not listening and forcing people to yell to get our attention through protests and through some violence, as Dr. King has said, these riots are the voices of the unheard. Instead of turning and not listening, let's turn towards the people who are trying to talk to us and listen to what they have to say. And even if the conversation gets tense, it's a conversation. But it's a conversation that needs to be had. And enough is enough. My parents came to this country to give me the opportunity for a better life, because this country upheld a certain ideal that made it so they could come here from their home. They left their home to come here for all of the things that the United States promised. Now, I am here having benefited from a lot, but I'm also here hurting, watching this country be torn apart and not live up to the ideals that made it a place that my parents wanted to come, because America was a place that could afford Greek immigrants an opportunity to build something and live a happy life, that could allow immigrants from anywhere to come in and work hard. This idea of America belonging to a certain subset of humans is wrong. America belongs to all of us. We need all of us. We need everyone here, from wherever they're from, whatever the color of their skin, whatever their gender, whatever their ethnicity, whatever their sexual orientation. We need everyone. If we're going to do this, if we're going to have a country that is a beacon to the world, we need everyone. We watch a sport where we judge people by how good they are on the floor. When I played basketball, I did not care who my point guard was having sex with. I did not care what color my shooting guard was. I did not care if my power forward was assigned a certain gender at birth. I didn't care. You know what I cared about? I cared about, can my point guard get me the ball? Can my shooting guard hit the shot when I kick it out? Can the power forward rebound if that shot missed? Can we together, working together, make this basket? Can we win this game? Can we work together and win this game? That's all that mattered. If we're not listening to the people who are crying out to us, who have been crying out to us all week, who have been saying, I can't breathe. If we're not listening, we're never going to get there. We're never going to get there. I hope we can listen. When we return back to basketball, I still want to provide a bit of a distraction. I still want to provide a little something for people to maybe, for a little bit of your day, maybe you can listen to something else. I hope that it doesn't come off as inappropriate. It's a decision that I'm making to give you a little bit of entertainment. And I don't want to talk about this. If you're pissed off that I'm talking about it, I'm pissed off that I am talking about it too. I'm pissed. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I never want to talk about this. Thanks for listening. We're back with basketball and Kevin Garnett. Thanks as always to Built Bar for sponsoring the Locked On Celtics podcast. They've been great. And if you haven't had any of the Built Bars, you're really missing out. I want to shout out the people. I had somebody send me a video on Instagram saying that he just bought a couple of boxes of the Built Bars. I'm excited about that. Hope you're enjoying those Built Bars. They're the most delicious protein bars on the market. I've been enjoying them. They're covered in chocolate. They're just great. Taste great. Low calorie, high protein, no extra carbs, no extra sugars. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first purchase and enjoy the best tasting protein bar in the market. While you're at their website, check out their comparison with other protein bars and you'll see that you're getting the best, not just the best tasting, but the best protein bar on the market. That's BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order. Now, we continue our conversation of the 2007-2008 champion Boston Celtics with Kevin Garnett and his impact on the Boston Celtics.
Danny Ainge made two huge signings. So my fears of this team struggling to fill in holes around their new big three, those were kind of taken away by the signings of Eddie House, which was a huge deal. And obviously Kevin Garnett's the biggest move, but the James Posey signing was the thing that tied everything together perfectly, because he was exactly the type of player that they needed off the bench. And they might have still won a title, but Posey did so much and was so important to that team. He's like the most underrated aspect of that team. Posey was the most important player off the bat. Like, so often they needed him to kind of give them the defense, the big 3-point shot, key thing. Like, he was just huge for them that season.
Yeah, he fit just a perfect role. He was like one of those first 3-and-D type guys. And he wasn't, I don't recall him being a young player. Right, he had a few years in the league. What, he had like 8 years in the league. So those two signings, those were great. I mean, because we had Rondo and Perk. So there was an interesting mix on this roster, right? I mean, we had Perk and Rondo, younger players with, quote unquote big three. Glenn Davis was another younger player. So I think you still had to figure out how they were all going to fit. But those two guys, I agree at the time, I think we were all having questions about the depth. But they're just perfect pieces. I mean, you couldn't have signed anybody that fit the roster better.
You remember the one controversy, or maybe not a controversy, but the big question mark was, is Rondo the right point guard? Because he was young, right? He was 21 years old.
Yeah.
And you had all these veterans who were 30 and 32 years old. And was he going to be the right guy to run the team? And of course he was. We didn't know what he had in him at that point. We could see something, but his best was yet to come. And if I could, I'll just throw out a few numbers from that season. They won 66 and lost 16. They improved their record by 42 games over the year before. And this is what got me real excited. At the beginning of the season, they started 8-0, And then they lost one game, and then it looked like they were going to lose again. They had won. They were 10 out of their first 11, okay? And they were playing at Charlotte, and it looked like they were going to lose. They were down. It was a few seconds left. Charlotte had the ball. And somehow they deflected the inbounds pass, got it over to Ray Allen, down two, and he hits a three to win it at the buzzer. They're 11-1. And, you know, I'm scraping myself off the ceiling of my TV room. And it was fantastic. At that point, you knew, wow, this is going to be a formidable team. And, you know, something I kept track of because I heard somebody say this as the season went by. If they, any game where they got an 18-point lead, that game was over. Once that happened, they never lost. I don't know how many times it happened, but they won by a lot every night, seemed like. So an 18-point lead was certain victory.
Yeah, I would say going into the season, I, as optimistic as I was, I did think it might take a season to kind of build some continuity and win the title. But as they started to, you know, their start to the season was obscene. And I don't know. I have recollect. I think their record was like 25 and like they were like 25-3 at one point. Or something like that. They were just on these ridiculous stretches. And with each win, I was just like, well, I was wrong. They've got it. They were just steamrolling teams and they looked like they'd played together forever. So it was just, you really, not to sound corny or sentimental, but you just like Garnett was such an impactful player. And everything he did that season and beyond on the court, off the court. It was just remarkable. Like I didn't expect to be like, have him say, I'm going to fall in love with Garnett the player and have him quickly become one of my favorite Celtics players of all time. But it happened. You know, like he just, I felt like he took this city by storm. Yes, it was three guys coming together. Yes, Pierce was still, it was still his team, his town. But man, I, and maybe a little bit of his just not fully grasping what Garnett was going to bring to the Celtics, but just his intensity, he was so goddamn crazy that it was, you know, and he brought that swagger, right? That's really what it was. Like you suddenly be, he, if you ever started to have doubts, he wouldn't let you, you know, he just had so much swagger, so much confidence. And he was just so tough and, you know, gritting balls. He had that. It was just all of that, you know, I feel like every time I talk about him that it kind of diminishes Paul. But it's really that sort of, it was that side of KG, the swagger, the intensity, that sort of toughness, that just really for me was just what I just couldn't get enough of. I couldn't get enough of. And I don't know. I know. You know, I think Garnett was defensive player of the year that year.
Yep.
Yes. Not to fast forward through the season, but I just remember thinking he should have been the MVP because, you know, he was the change the culture guy. He just had everybody else in line. I just felt like he was deserving of MVP.
Absolutely. This is one of my pet peeves from that season that he didn't get that. You know why he didn't get it? Because the voters are always stupid. MVP awards, Coach of the Year awards. This really gets me because there's no standard criteria. You know, it changes from one year to the next depending on who gets someone's attention. I remember the reason Garnett not only didn't win MVP, he finished third. And how can somebody have been more valuable than him that year? The reason that, or the explanation, the excuse as to why he didn't win was described at that time, general agreement was, well, the Celtics had one stretch where he didn't play for 9 games. He had an injury. I don't remember what it was. So he was out for 9 games. They won 7 of those. So that like took away from him. And how complete nonsense. All right. And Kobe won the MVP that year. Ugh. His only MVP award. And Chris Paul was 2nd. And because New Orleans overachieved that season, they had not expected to be a top team and they won more than 50 games. No doubt he had a great season, but any common sense look at what happened during the season, the Celtics led from beginning to end. They were never headed. They easily had the best record. How could you not give it to them? The next year, the Cavs had the best record and LeBron got the MVP. So, you know, that year was, let's give it to the player, best player on the best team. Well, why didn't Garnett get that consideration? The same thing happened to Doc Rivers. He didn't win Coach of the Year. After he put together this new team, they had 9 new players in 2007 and 2008. 9 new players from the team the year before. And he not only put that together to make a great season, but they won everything. Again, how could you not give it to him? I will never understand it. The only one who won that year was Ainge. He won the Executive of the Year. But as you can tell, these two things still rankle me.
Valid, Mike. I'm glad to hear. I'm right there with you. Right there.
This is a great time to get some reading in and learn a lot of things, especially with a lot of things that are going on in this world. This is an opportunity for you to get some great nonfiction books, some books on these topics, and understand and learn a little bit. You can do that through Blinkist, because Blinkist will allow you to not just read a book, but get a few different books and sit down and learn more, because they will boil things down. Blinkist is unique like that. It's on your phone, tablet, browser, and it'll give you the best key takeaways from all of these books, thousands of nonfiction books. It condenses them down to just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. So you want to get a few different books, a few different perspectives, download the Blinkist app, and you'll get a chance to get the key takeaways in just 15 minutes. So if you're sitting there on a lunch hour, you can blow through 3 different books and get all of the information you need to know. You can get with its audio feature. You could be running. You could be out for a run. We talk about maximizing your lunch hour. You can go out for a run, pop 3 books onto Blinkist. You can go for 45 minutes. You can get a nice few miles in and a few books in as well. You can do it during your commute or whenever. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now. It's got a massive growing library. There's self-help, business, health, history, all those kinds of books, the latest bestseller list, and also classic nonfiction titles that you've always meant to read, but you've never had time to. I've used Blinkist. I think it's great. And you can get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want to read, for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for the Locked On Celtics audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. Try free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your 7-day trial. You'll also get 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
I'm glad you mentioned, Chuck, that this discussion of Kevin Garnett does have this feeling of like minimizing Pierce to a degree. But the fact is that after Pierce had been here for so long, he'd been through so much. Like, Pierce was part of what had been happening. It's hard for him to do what Kevin Garnett did. And Kevin Garnett is such a force of nature that it's pretty clear that his attitude was going to be what took over the Celtics. And I always compare it to the comic book character, the Venom, where that just, it kind of takes people over, but in a, I wouldn't say a good way, but some people might not say a good way, but when Kevin Garnett came to Boston, and you mentioned it, Chuck, culture change is the number one thing, more than the rebounds and the block shots and all of that other stuff. It was the culture change, this attitude that this is how you win. This is excellence. You're going to carry yourself in a manner that exudes excellence and hard work. And we're going to do this the right way. And I've mentioned this, I think, somewhere along this path with Mike. You get to, by the time you get to 2007, 2008, you've had such a long stretch of just debilitating, demoralizing, tragic. What the Celtics have always meant, what it meant to be a Boston Celtic, that was lost. It was all just, it muddled and gone. The 86, the 80s Boston Celtics, the pride, the Celtic pride that Red Auerbach had worked so hard to build was gone. And Kevin Garnett, when he arrived, brought it back, like single-handedly brought it back. Like, I don't even remember the game. I don't remember what it was. But I do remember early on, that shot of him popping his jersey out, like, so much, like, it was, like, 3 feet in front of his body after a big play or a big win. That happened early in that season. And it was just like, whoa, this guy is, like, totally all in on being a Boston Celtic. Who has ever come in and been that all in that quickly on being a Boston Celtic? Like, even Pierce had gone through his time where he was like, do I even want to be here? He's had it. And he recently, even in the course of this discussion, had the good player on a bad team. Like, he had separated himself to some degree from leading this team. And Kevin Garnett comes in immediately and challenges people in practice, challenges people, sets rules, sets pretty arcane hierarchy, but like shit, like a rookie grabbing food before the veterans, he would slap it out of the rookie's hands and said, you don't eat till the big dogs eat. Like,
yeah,
shit like that. Like, he was just like, it was regimented. And some of it's like being an asshole. And I'll mention this. I'll fold this into the whole equation. Just moving just a little bit forward, just for the sake of this discussion. July 16, 2008, Danny Ainge signed Patrick O'Brien. Patrick O'Brien was traded on February 19th, 2009, because Kevin Garnett broke that poor kid, like mercilessly broke him, because Pat O'Brien was not like he wanted to challenge Patrick O'Brien and he just wasn't getting, and he went so ferociously at Patrick O'Brien that he broke him, and like he was out of the league. Now, I don't know that's because Kevin Garnett like did something mentally to him, but like, if you're going to be like that, you're probably not going to be in the league either. Sorry, Chuck, but
no, I was just going to say, just look at what happened to Glenn Davis.
Yeah.
I mean, Glenn also, you know, Big Baby had his, it would butt heads with Doc, but you know, KG would also ride his ass too.
Yep.
So there are plenty of times we saw Glenn like having, you know, nervous breakdowns on the bench. Just imagine KG riding him in practice and just everywhere. Just to kind of bring it back to Pierce a bit, in a way, like, KG still had the ability to be deferential. Like, whenever he talked about Pierce, it was always in, like, these glowing terms. Like, you know, Pierce is doing his thing. I mean, he called him Superman. Like, he does things that I can't do. You know, it was, I'll do my thing on defense. And, you know, when P's going, we just get out of the way. You just think about that press conference where he was humming the Superman theme song and the two of them were just going – like, Right? That was a classic KG, but that showed like he can be the center of attention, but still in this weird like KG way, still be deferential. And that's, you know, I think why it worked so much. It wasn't like Garnett's just here puffing his chest out, throwing his weight around. He did his thing, but he propped up the other guys and built them up in publicly and probably privately too. So that's why I also felt like it was so easy to embrace Garnett, because it's not like he was trying to overshadow Paul. He valued everything Paul brought and hyped him up just as much. And that just made him even cooler.
Well, he respected their greatness. Pierce and Ray Allen were on his level. And so he respected them to that degree. But again, I'll go back to that podcast, the All the Smoke podcast, where Kevin Garnett talked about like challenging people and, you know, saying like horrible thing, like really just going at guys, going at them hard, rookies, younger players, challenging them. And in reality, what he wanted was for them to fight back. He wanted to see who was going to fight him. He wanted to see, to paraphrase him, who the dogs were. So when he got into a game and he snapped into that crazy zone, he wanted to know who had his back. And so challenging Kendrick Perkins, who was young and soft and needed to work on his body back then, he challenged Perk, and Perk came back at him. And that's what he wanted. He knew once Perk came back at him that he had a partner on the front line, and that those two guys, once he knew that's my guy, and I'm going to take him under my wing, and I know he's going to put in that work, and I know he's going to fight with me, that boom, sealed, done, delivered. That's his guy. And
well, that's the Michael Jordan school of leadership. Exactly. I mean, that's the takeaway from The Last Dance, right? So It's like, let me go at you and ride you and see what you're made of, right? That's what that is.
We'll continue this conversation with KG. Still not done talking about Garnett and his influence on the Boston Celtics. It's an amazing influence. It's a complicated influence for some people, but it's the beginning of why the Boston Celtics were able to win a championship and turn things around so quickly in 2007-2008. I hope you've all enjoyed this podcast and continue to subscribe. We'll spend the rest of the week talking about the 2007-2008 championship team, and then move past that as we continue our conversation. We'll get into the 2010s. There's a lot here to talk about. We're going to get to the Kendrick Perkins trade, Jeff Green. There's so much that's still left to talk about before we even get to 2010. And then the post-KG, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen era. So please subscribe if you haven't subscribed. If you have a 5-star rating and a good written review, it would be great. Please go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first purchase of the best tasting protein bar on the market. Now, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.